Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Deepening Our Davening. This is our fourth class in a series of five, and hopefully they build on each other, but they are independent. Last week, we spoke about Pesukei de Zimra and Brachos, and this week, we're going to continue with Berachos Kriyas Shema and some of Kriyas Shema, and maybe we'll even start Shmona Esrei, although I'm not committing to that. I am not sure. We'll see how it goes. We entitled the shiur Entering the Inner Sanctum, because this is really where we get to the crux of davening. We're standing in front of the Ribono Solam. So if you have a sitter and can follow along with us, that's great. But here we go. Let's get to it. Just to sort of zoom out for a second to get the overall structure before we zoom in on some of the individual tefillos. So there's something that we do every day that I think we take for granted, but in actuality, it did not need to be so. So we have the mitzvah of Kriyas Shema, which is a mitzvah midoraisa, a biblical mitzvah, to recite at least the first pasuk of the Shema and likely even the first paragraph of the Ahavta 2 times a day, b'shachpacha v'kumacha. That's one mitzvah that relates to proclaiming our emunah in Hashem. And then we have another mitzvah that is according to most opinions, and certainly the particular format we have, all opinions, we have a mitzvah of saying Shmona Esrei 3 times a day, and that's a biblical, rabbinic mitzvah. Now, they're separate mitzvos. They're not really fundamentally connected per se. However, we always do them in conjunction with one another. And one of the reasons we do that is because of the notion of smichas geula litfila, meaning juxtaposing the redemption with our davening, our amida. Meaning to say, already in the Mishnah in Brachos, the rabbis instituted three blessings for, or actually three blessings in the morning Shema, two blessings that precede Shema, and one that follows Shema. And we're going to delve into those a bit today. And this last blessing of Berachos Kriyas Shema mentions the Geula from Egypt, mentions how Hashem redeemed us from Mitzrayim and took us out from slavery and split the Yam Suf for us. And as we'll discuss in a little bit, try to figure out why this is. The rabbis felt that that blessing following Kriyas Shema ought to be juxtaposed to the Shemona Esrei and to the Amidah, which is why we always do Shema right before Shemona Esrei. So just in terms of the structure, the next part of davening, we have Shema, but then we expand Shema on a rabbinic level. We have two brachos before Kriya Shema, one bracha afterward, and because of Semichas Geula Litefila, we follow with Shemona Esrei. So that is the structure. That is what we are doing when we continue from Mishtaba. Just a word about distinction between this part of davening and the other parts of davening. So often in shul, you'll have a different chazan if you're in shul for this part of davening. It's called the chazan for shacharis, whereas the first part's for Pesukei de Zimra. So is there any fundamental distinction between our topic last week and this week? So the Rav felt that yes, that there is, based on the Rambam, that really the first part of davening, even if you're in shul, is more of an individual prayer. Sort of a notion of everybody individually saying the Pesukei de Zimra. However, once we get to Yishtabach and Berachos Kriyas Shema, or particularly Baruch Hu and Berachos Kriyas Shema, that is already a communal prayer, obviously, if you are in Eitz Zibor, right? So the Rav explained the role of Kaddish, which precedes Berachos Kriyas Shema, that the role, aside from just demarcating a different part of davening, that Kaddish is something that requires a tzibor, and the role of the Kaddish is to unite the Kahal so that when you say Berachos Kriyas Shema, you're saying it together communally. It's not just an individual prayer. So that's a word about there is a distinction between this part and the next part. Let's open up to this first bracha, Berachos Kriyas Shema, which is actually very intriguing. And so we'll try to do at least the main themes of these brachos and then try to zoom out and look at the whole nature of this part of davening as a whole. So the first bracha is, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, which is something we talked about last week, the general formula for blessings, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, He who fashions light and creates darkness, Oseh Shalom, he does peace, Uvore Es HaKol, and creates everything. So this blessing is a clear take or a modification of a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Parak Mem Dalet. The pasuk in Yeshayahu, the context of which is very interesting, in which Yeshayahu Hanavi predicts that Hashem will appoint Koresh a few hundred years later as a king of Persia to allow the Jews to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And in that context, it's just talking about how Hashem controls everything. And the pasuk says, Yotzer or uvorei choshech, oseh shalom uvorei ra. That the pasuk in Yeshayahu says, instead of uvorei es hakol, that God creates evil. Which is it clearly, we don't say ra. Now, the Gemara sort of takes it a step further. The Gemara is intrigued by this formulation. So first it says, maybe instead of saying Yotzer or Uvorei Choshech, we ought to have said Yotzer or Uvorei Noga. Noga means twilight, because there is a problem here that many Mefarshim talk about. The word Choshech means darkness, but is darkness a creation? You could say maybe it's not a creation. Darkness is simply the absence of light. So maybe it would have been more appropriate for it to say Vorei Noga, that God creates twilight or a limited amount of light as opposed to or. But we don't say that. We say Yotzer or Vorei Choshech. So the Gemara says, well, the blessing is patterned after the language of the pasuk in Yeshayahu, which says Yotzer or Vorei Choshech. That's what Yeshayahu said. So we also say Yotzer or Vorei Choshech. But then the Gemara asks, but we don't exactly follow the language of the pasuk in Yeshayahu, because we say, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Es HaKol, instead of Uvorei Ra. To which the Gemara says, Lishna Ma'aliyah Naka. We chose a nice language, a more positive language. So what's actually going on here? Well, it's a lack of parallelism, right? It could have said either Yotzer or Uvorei Noga, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Es HaKol, which would have been more accurate. You might, if you didn't want to say Uvorei Ra, or you could say Yotzer or Uvorei Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Ra. But Cook explained as follows. Very interesting thought. He said, there's two different roles that we have when we speak. Sometimes what we're trying to do is we are trying to reflect the reality as we perceive it. And as we perceive reality, there is such a thing as Borei Choshech and Borei Ra. Meaning to say, does God create evil? A kind of philosophically challenging notion. Is it God that creates the evil in the world, or does the evil just exist when people perform evil? So in terms of our experience, though, we experience evil and we experience darkness. So Choshech on the one hand is parallel to Ra. On the other hand, if we were describing more philosophically, in a more philosophically accurate way, you wouldn't say Borei Choshech, you'd say Borei Noga. And you'd say, well, we do say, Uvorei Es HaKol, that God created everything. Does true evil exist? Maybe we perceive it as evil, but if we were to understand what God created, it's just a piece of the entire picture. So Rav Kook says, when we daven, what we're trying to do is to praise the Ribono Shel Olam for his creations. And so we say Uvorei Es HaKol. We say it as it is. We don't say it just in the way we experience it, like the Navi did when talking to the people. We say Uvorei Es HaKol. But we also wanted to mention both Or and Choshech, light and darkness, for another reason. We want, as the Mefarshim say, want to clarify that there is only one force behind everything. There is not a God of darkness and a God of light. The darkness and the light both come from God. So to contrast light and darkness, we say Or and Choshech. Zooming out on the specific language here, so we are really doing a lot with this bracha. It's a great statement of emuna, statement of belief. Firstly, the role of this bracha is to say that when we look up and we see the sun and we see the moon and we see the luminaries and light and darkness, so we acknowledge that although they have such a direct impact on our experience in the world, Especially you think about the way that the world was viewed in the times of Chazal, whether it was sun or, sunny or not, or the weather had such an impact on their livelihood. And there were certainly those who worshiped those forces as deities because they had such an impact. And we are saying here, although they do have that impact, they are not independent forces. God is Yotzer or Vorei Choshech, that those forces come from the Ribono Shel, the light and the darkness, the natural forces above us, are just fulfilling God's desire in carrying out the natural cycle. And beyond Or and Choshech, the Rebbe pointed out, beyond the natural order, which we say comes from Ribono Shel, both the light and the darkness, there's also a moral order. Shalom, shalom, peace. Peace is not a natural creation. Peace is a moral creation. The notion that things can fit together and, everything can have its place in the world and people can get along, that also comes from God too. The notion of morality, good, evil, those are also creations. They don't exist in and of themselves. So we mention God as both the source of the natural order and of the moral order. Evil and good and peace also come from God. And as I mentioned earlier, it's also a deep statement of faith where we say the purpose of changing Ra to Hakol is that while on the one hand we see light and darkness, we might not always understand the role that darkness plays, but we don't say Uvore Ra. Our explanation of the word evil is that Boreas Hakol, God created everything. Everything has its place. It's hard for us to perceive, but in making this bracha, we see God as a source of everything, and that ultimately, it all relates to the fuller picture and to God's plan in the universe, and that what we perceive as Ra is not actually evil. So that this first blessing really has two parts to it, but it all relates to seeing God through nature and the things that control nature, experiencing God through witnessing the luminaries and the stars and the constellations and the sun and the moon. If you go a little further in the bracha, there's two things that we mention. So as I mentioned, we start with Yotzer Or. The next paragraph, HaMeir La'aretz V'la'darim Aleha, God illuminates the earth and those that live on it with mercy. That, again, mentioning the light, the sources of light that we have in the world. Ma rabu masecha Hashem kula b'chokhmah asisa. How great is your wisdom, God? You made everything. Or how great are your creations, God? You made everything with wisdom. So this whole first paragraph is about the natural order. We look around, we look up, we see the sun, the moon, the stars, the way that the world is illuminated and how there's a cycle. And that all comes from Ribono Shel. It's experiencing God through nature. The next few paragraphs are different. The next few paragraphs are not about light and darkness, but they're about something different. If you look, for instance, at Tisbarach Tzureinu, we talk about the following. Tisbarach Tzureinu Malkeinu V'Goaleinu, may you be blessed, our King, our Redeemer, Borei Kedoshim, who creates the Holy Ones. Yotshabash Shimcha La'ad Malkeinu, may your name be praised, our King. Yotzer Misharasim, who creates servants, Va'asher Misharasav Kulam Omdim Berum Olam, that his servants all stand at the height of the world. What does this refer to? This is a reference to the angels. After we mention the luminaries, the sun and the moon, we talk about the angels, a level above that in the realm, the heavenly realm. What is the relationship between these two things? And that's the next part of this is something that actually many Rishonim held you don't say unless you're in a tzibur. Because what we do then after mentioning how awesome God's angels are and those who serve in on high, we mimic the angels. We mimic the angels through Kedusha. We depict how the angels all join together and sing a song to God and say, Kadosh, 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 exalted, exalted, exalted is God. And we mimic the way that they do that. But what's the connection between the angels and the fact that God created the light and the darkness? So the Rav said something I find quite insightful. He said that while we know in like philosophically, angels are clearly just servants of God. They're there to serve a purpose. They're there to fulfill missions. A malach is a messenger. A malach is an agent. Hashem gives the malach a job. The malach does the job. We don't necessarily see the sun and the moon that way. Right, naturally, we sort of look around at the world around us, and we say it sort of is, you know, it sort of exists. It just goes and goes and goes. It does what it does because that's what it always has done. And by juxtaposing the angels in heaven and the sun and the moon, what we're saying is no, that everything is truly a messenger of God. That the sun is there fulfilling God's agency also. God put it there for a reason, and it's performing the duty of God every day as we see it. The moon is as well. Both the angels and the luminaries are agents of God. And so what we're doing with these blessings is seeing the entire creation in this world and in the world above us as we ascend and we mimic the angels as all emanating from God. This is also why many Mefarshim say we mention this Kedusha. So we say Kedusha three different times. We have Kedusha in Shmona Esrei that we do in the Chazan's repetition, which has an additional line. There, we're the ones proclaiming God's holiness. We say Nikadesh Eshimcha. We will sanctify your name. Here, we actually don't say Nikadesh Eshimcha. What we're doing in this version of Kedusha in Berachos Kriyat Shema is just recounting what the angels do when they sanctify God's name, which is why, by the way, some say you don't need a minyan, even though you would think this is a Davar Shebikdusha, because we are not ourselves proclaiming God's holiness. We are mimicking what the angels do, almost imagining ourselves as if we are angels too, standing up there in heaven, joining together with myriads of angels saying Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. But we're really just mimicking what they do. But why do we mention this here at all? Why is there a Kedusha in Birchos Kriyat Shema? Seems like a bit out of place. Here we are talking about the sun and the moon and the stars and how God created the natural world. And all of a sudden we start talking about what the angels do in heaven. So one answer given by the Abba Draham is that this first blessing is really all about Emunah. And I'll try to embellish upon that in a bit. That everything, the Or and the Choshech, that the Ra and the Tov all comes from God. There isn't two deities. There's not a God of evil and a God of the good. There isn't a God of light and a God of darkness. Everything emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's about strengthening that emunah and attributing everything to God. And that's why in this context, we also bolster our faith by mimicking the angels in the way they acknowledge God's holiness. So this first bracha is really all about emunah. If you skip sort of toward the end of this first blessing, and just to point out, from Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam to Yotzer HaMa'oros, despite the fact that it is multifaceted and there are various paragraphs in there, it's all one blessing. It's all the first blessing of Berachos Kriyat Shema, and it ends, Or Chadash Al Tzion Ta'ir V'nizkeh Kulanu Meher Elioro. A new light you should illuminate on Sion, and we should all benefit from its light. Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you, God, Yotzer HaMa'oros, who creates the luminaries. So you clearly see the connection between the Yotzer Or V'Orei Choshech and Yotzer HaMa'oros. It's all one blessing, praising God for creating this system above us. But many are troubled by this last line, Or Chadash Al Tzion Ta'ir, that God will shine a new light. What does it refer to? And also, why are we talking about that? This seems to be a reference to the Messianic age, Yimos HaMashiach, when there'll be some sort of new light that we'll be able to experience. But we're not talking about Mashiach right now. We're talking about Hashem creating the world. So why mention it? Some Rishonim took this line out from the line preceding the last bracha. They said it's inappropriate. And then it shouldn't be there. It's a mistake. But the Sevil HaLevi and others note that maybe this relates to the Medrash at the beginning of time. That we have a Medrash that says that the first light that Hashem created on day one, the first light was hidden away for the tzaddikim la'asa lavo. So Hashem created that original Or, and then He hid it away. And that when Mashiach comes, so those who benefit Olam Haba will benefit from the first light. So the Or Chadash is kind of ironic. It's a new light, but it's actually the light that God hid away at the beginning of time for the tzaddikim. And since He created it at the beginning of the world, when we mention the fact that Hashem created the light and the darkness, etc., we daven that the first light, that most pure light, that Or Chadash, we should experience it when Mashiach comes. So it indeed does move to creation. But I think it's also helpful for the transition to the next blessing, right? This first blessing essentially is universal. It's a universal blessing. Hashem created the sun, Hashem created the moon. Everybody can say that. Everybody can attest to the world that we live in and that it comes from a creator. The second next blessing is not universal. Indeed, it is very particular to the Jewish people. The next blessing of Shema is Ahava Rabbah, where we talk about how Hashem expressed his love to us through giving us the Torah. So in that vein then, this ending of the first blessing helps to serve as a transition. We move from generally attesting to God's greatness as seen in the world, and particularly through the luminaries above us and through the angels, to a specific endpoint of history and of time. God created the world, but it isn't always going to exist in its current state. There is a trajectory. There is an end of time. There is an endpoint. History is moving in a specific direction. That's toward the Or Chadash. So in moving from a general focus on creation to a specific focus in our fate as a people on the Netzach Yisrael, on Yemos Mashiach, we end with this Or Chadash. And that's really the end of this first blessing. Moving on here, the truth is that this next blessing, really just to read it, is very moving. It's an incredible expression of God's love for the Jewish people. We say, Ahava Rabbah Avtanu Hashem Elokeinu, a great love you have loved us, the Lord our God. Chemla Gidola Visera Chamalta Leinu, great compassion you have shown upon us. The Rav pointed out that Ahava and Chemla are different. Ahava is a moral judgment. You love someone because you recognize something in them. Something about this person that you admire, and that admiration evolves into a love for the person. Chemla is a bit different. Chemla is just compassion. Chemla is when you see somebody and there's something about them you might not even know about them, but you just have pity on them. You might not know the person, they're going through a hard time. You have chemla. So on the one hand, there is a love God has to Jewish people because of the qualities that they hopefully demonstrate. There's also a chemla gedola, something that's inexplicable. God has a compassion for us just because he does. And the love, how is that love expressed? That love is expressed through two things. The first part of Ahava Rabbah is how we express our gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam for showing us his love by giving us Torah and mitzvos. And we daven that we should be able to live up to that legacy and to actually fulfill the Torah and mitzvos and to learn the entire Torah, to teach the entire Torah. And in a very moving way that Hashem should enlighten our eyes and we should cleave to his mitzvos and unify our hearts in his fear and his awe and his love. That's the first part of the blessing. Then we switch to another theme entirely, which is the hoping for the ultimate redemption, right? We move on as you go to the end of the blessing here. Please bring us toward peace from all four corners of the land. And you will bring us upright to our land. Because you are somebody who creates salvation and you chose us from all languages. So here we focus on another aspect, and that is our chosenness and our belief in the ultimate redemption. What is the connection between our God loving us through Torah and loving us and our faith in Mashiach? So the Rav suggested that this is actually what we want to accomplish through saying the Shema, which immediately follows the second blessing. We say Shema, we attest to a belief, but it's more than that. I could say I believe in God philosophically, and that's an important point too. But it's much more than just an objective philosophical belief that we are aiming for when we say Shema. It is a subjective personal experience of that belief. I believe in God and therefore. I believe in God and therefore what? I believe in God and therefore I experience the love he has bestowed upon us by keeping his Torah and mitzvos. I appreciate that love. And that's really the first paragraph of Shema also, but that's Ahava Rabba. That's the first part. So but belief isn't enough. Belief is, it needs to be experienced through that feeling of love for God and the feeling that he loves us, and that the greatest demonstration of that is his giving of the Torah. And then that belief has to have a real faith. A faith that we're going in a certain direction. A faith in that redemption. When we mentioned in the third paragraph of Shema Yetzias Mitzrayim, that God is going to take us again out of the Golus. So before we say Shema, we sort of prepare ourselves mentally. When we say Shema, what ought we experience? What is the product of our belief? And it is twofold. It's a love for God and his Torah and mitzvos, and it's a faith in the ultimate redemption. And those are the two themes we mention in Ahava Rabba. One more point, sort of taking this two together. So Yotzer Or, as I mentioned, focuses on a more general belief in God as a creator of the world, the natural order. And then Ahava Rabba is a more particular love demonstrated toward the Jewish people in choosing us and giving us the Torah and ultimately our faith in the final redemption. The Rambam talks about two pathways toward Ahavas Hashem. How does a person come to love God, to have a passion, to want to get close to God? So in one place, in the Yad HaChazaka, in his more encyclopedic work on Jewish life, the Rambam says a person comes to love and awe of God through contemplating Ma'aseh Bereishis, looking around the world around us and seeing the beauty of nature and science, etc., and saying, wow, what an unbelievable creator. But in the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam says that the way to come to the love of God is through studying the Torah, through appreciating the wisdom and depth of Torah and mitzvos can bring a person to the love of God. It is fascinating to me that we focus on these two themes in the Shema before we talk about Shema and V'ahavta. Two vehicles, two avenues to have that love of the Ribono Sholom. Looking at the Or and the Choshech, looking around the natural world, and then also appreciating the beauty of Torah and mitzvos, that's the introduction to Kriya Shema, and that is what we open up the Shema with. And the truth is, this connection between the Berchos, Kriya Shema, and Shema itself goes another step further, and the Rav pointed this out, and I think it's a really beautiful insight. If we think about the three blessings before and after Shema, they have three themes. The first is the belief that God is the creator of the world, the source of everything. The second is a theme of Torah and mitzvos and God's love for us through Torah and mitzvos. And the third is what I mentioned earlier, Geula, Geulas Mitzrayim, how Hashem took us out of Egypt and redeemed us. The three paragraphs of Shema can be seen as a parallel to those three blessings. The first paragraph of Shema is about Emunah, about Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting God as the king over ourselves, as the creator of the universe. That's the first blessing. That's Yotzer Or Vorei Choshech. In Vahaya Im Shemoa, what we're doing is committing to keeping the Torah and mitzvos. It's about tzchar and onesh, that if we keep the mitzvos, God rewards us. If we don't, he punishes us, and we commit to that agreement. That's the second blessing of Kriya Shema, Ahava Rabba, Torah and mitzvos. And then the third paragraph of Kriya Shema, we say for Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, we say Hashem took us out of Egypt. Anochi ani Hashem lokeichem asher utzeisi escha me'aretz Mitzrayim. So that is obviously parallel to the blessing that follows Kriya Shema, which is about Geula. So these can then be seen as one integrated unit. The first blessing is parallel to the first paragraph of Kriya Shema. The second blessing is parallel to the second paragraph of Kriya Shema. And the third blessing is parallel to the third paragraph of Kriya Shema. So Berachos Kriya Shema is almost a rabbinic extension of Kriya Shema itself. That's why the Rav explained on a halachic level. It's interesting. If a person doesn't know generally whether they've already performed a mitzvah called a safik d'oraisa. So if a person doesn't know whether they said Shema, so they say Shema again, because when it comes to a biblical mitzvah, you have to, in a case of doubt, be stringent and do the mitzvah again. In the case of a rabbinic mitzvah, which is less strict, we usually say you can be lenient. And so, for instance, if a person is not sure that they made a blessing on a food, they think they might have, they don't remember, they don't make the blessing again because the obligation to make a blessing is rabbinic. But the Rambam says something interesting. He says, if a person is not sure whether they said Shema, they should say the Shema and its blessings. Which is interesting. The blessings of Shema are not biblical, they're rabbinic. So the Rambam should have said that if you're not sure if you say Shema, you don't say the blessings again, but you say the Shema itself. Why do we say both Kriya Shema and Berchos Kriya Shema, says the Rav? Because once the Rabbanon made the blessings of Kriya Shema, it's all one unit. They're integrated, as we explain. It's all an expansion of one idea of Kriya Shema, accepting these three themes. Therefore, once you're saying Shema again, you don't say Shema without the blessings, because they are integrated and connected. So we have these two blessings before Kriya Shema, and then we get to Shema itself. We could spend, obviously, hours on Shema itself, and we're not going to do that. I did want to just share one, I think, simple but insightful point the Rav makes about Shema, which I don't think we focus on enough. Who are we talking to when we say Shema? So you would say, I would have said, God, right? You say Shmona Esrei, you're talking to God. But it's not. We're not. Shema Yisrael. We're actually talking to one another. We're talking to each other. Shema is a communal declaration of our faith as a people in the Ribono Sholom. It's not the same as Shmona Esrei. In Shmona Esrei, we're talking to God. In Shema, we're not talking to God. We're actually talking to each other. We are inspiring one another, almost like the Malachim do when they say Kedusha and they turn to each other and they say Belev Echad, Kados, Kados, Kados. We turn to one another and attest to our faith in the Ribono Sholem. So when we say Shema Yisrael, it's really a call to each other, which is just a fascinating thing that we don't always talk about. But it's not, it's really about much more than a philosophical belief. Many of the Rishonim talk about how that when one says Shema, so they ought to think or awaken within themselves the absolute loyalty to God, and that they're dedicating everything, every part of their being to Him. So when we say Hashem is one, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, aside from this statement that we are saying we believe in only one God, we're monotheists, we're also dedicating the entirety of our lives to God. There's only one source of creation, and therefore we ought to serve Him with everything that we have, which is what we say in Vi'ahavta. We're going to love God with all our hearts and all our souls and all our means. So the importance is on focusing on that dedication, on that connection, which hopefully we're in the mindset of doing after we've already said these Berchos Kriya Shema. And the reason we have the Brachos, the paragraphs of Kriya Shema in this order, is a very particular reason. The first paragraph of Kriya Shema, as I mentioned, is about God, our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam Himself. That we believe in God, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, and that we dedicate our lives to serving Him. That's the first step. That's the foundation. Any specifics beyond that rely on that. First, the question is, whom do you serve? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We only serve one master. Beyond that is Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos. We serve God, but that doesn't mean we get to do whatever we want. It's a commitment to living the life He asks of us to live. And that's the second paragraph of Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos. Then the third paragraph is a specific mitzvah, that of Tzitzis, which focuses on Hashkacha, the fact that God took us out of Egypt, and that we have to be careful with our, we have to be careful from sinning, because God is always watching what we do. So it's sort of that progression of what we believe in, what we commit ourselves to doing, and the fact that God is watching us while we do it, as evidence through Yitzias Mitzrayim. And therefore, we have to be very careful about everything that we do. And then we have the final blessing of Kriya Shema, which is the blessing of Geula, where we talk about the redemption from Egypt. That's what the next three paragraphs are really about. The first one is sort of an affirmation. V'yatzev v'nachon v'kayom v'yashar v'ne'eman. that everything I just said, my commitment to Ribono Shel Olam, to mitzvos, to the belief in Hashgacha, it's correct, it's true, it's straight. Sort of reaffirming what we've already said. And then we say the ahav v'chaviv v'nechma v'na'im. It's beloved, it's precious, it's pleasant. My Rosh Hashiva from Shalvin, Rav Yaakovson, pointed out these are two different type of affirmations. One is that it's true. One question to ask is, do you believe or are you committed to keeping Torah and mitzvos? Are you making that commitment? But even if you're making that commitment, there's another question to ask. Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you enjoy it? That's the second thing. First, Emes v'yatsiv, it's true. There is a God and he's watching over what we do. But also, Ahav v'chaviv v'nechman, it's beloved, it's precious, it's beautiful, it's pleasant. And Amunah has to be something that we experience also. It has to be something that we love. So we affirm both that we believe everything we just said and that we find it to be beautiful and precious to us. And after making that affirmation, we talk then about Mitzrayim, right? That's in Esdras Avosenu. I mean, Mitzrayim Galtanu, skipping ahead a little bit, you redeemed us from Egypt. Mi beis avodim pidisanu, you redeemed us from the house of servants. Talk about Malkas Bechoros and Kriyas Yamsuf. And that leads up directly to Shmona Eshu, Shmona Esrei. So here I'll just end, and maybe we'll begin Shmona Esrei next week. I don't want to do too much this week. With this notion of Smichas Geula Letfila. Why is this so important? Why do we mention the Geula from Mitzrayim right before we daven Shmona Esrei? Why does we had this progression of Shema and then Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then we can daven before God? It's interesting. So on a very basic level, you could say that it almost gives us a license to daven before Ribono Shel Olam. Who are we to stand before God? What right do we have to do that? Part of the right we have is that we're affirming our faith in him and our faith in his choosing of our people. That by saying, God redeemed us from Egypt, and we believe in him and accept upon ourselves to serve him, that's what gives us the right to then stand before him in prayer and to ask him for our needs. But the Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachos asks this question, and he gives two other answers, which I just wanted to share with you, which are really the opposite. That is to say that Shmona Esrei is the perfect response to Shema. Not that Shema and Geulas Mitzrayim are not just that they're an introduction to Shmona Esrei and a license for Shmona Esrei, but the opposite also, for two reasons. One, when you say Shema, you ought to remember what happened to our ancestors in Egypt and ask yourself, well, why did God do all of us, do that for us? Why did he take us out of Egypt? What was the purpose of that? The purpose of that was so that we could stand before him and service. And so the first thing that we do after we say we believe in this and it's beautiful and it's precious to us, we then go and serve God. Davening is serving the Ribono Shel Olam. It's Avodah Shebelev. Even though we're asking for what we need, it's a way of acknowledging, as we discussed so much, everything comes from Ribono Shel Olam and giving him that praise. So we want to act upon that belief. How are we going to act upon our belief in the Ribono Shel Olam? Shmona Esrei. We get up there and we daven. And that's an act of service to God. And also, it's also the ultimate act of faith and reliance. You say you believe in God. You say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You say you believe in his Hashgacha and he's watching everything that we do. Prove it. We do prove it when we get up there and we daven. When we get up there and daven and you ask Hashem for the things you need, you are showing that he is in control and has the power to answer those prayers. So it is the ultimate demonstration of our bitachon. So it goes both ways. Shema is an introduction to Shmona Esrei, but Shmona Esrei is also the perfect response to the Shema in engaging in the service of the Ribono Shel Olam, the voice of Hashem, and also showing our bitachon. I'll leave you just with one more thought that relates to a much earlier part of davening, but I think is relevant to our discussion. We've been talking a lot about faith and emunah and loyalty, and we all have questions. I think we all have questions. There are difficult things in our lives. There are things that we question. And sometimes it's hard to believe. I think there is a place for that. But one of my friends, Rabbi Hudachinsky's name, has once pointed out, it's very interesting. One of the things we have accustomed to say now is Yigdal Elokim Chai, right? The very beginning of davening. We talk about Yigdal. Yigdal is a much later poem, but it really is a summary of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith, 13 Ani Mamans. Why do we do that? And so we said something basic, but I think very powerful. There is a place to ask questions. And we're always asking questions and grappling with faith. But once we step into the prayer hall, and once you stand in front of the Ribono Shel Olam, that's when you pause the grappling with faith. That's when you say, I'm going to continue asking the questions, but right now, I'm standing in front of God and I do have faith. I am loyal to that belief. And maybe as we'll talk about next week, it's because it's a faith that's Elokeinu v'Elokei. It's a faith that's been passed down from generation to generation. But the point is, the saying Shema and when we say Shemona Esrei is not the time to be asking those questions of faith. There is a time and a place for that. But in order to actually stand up there and daven, we first have to have that very basic faith that we're praying in front of the Ribono Shel Olam, he's listening to our prayers, and so that we can have that conversation. And once we have that conversation and we establish that, then within that context, we can go back to asking the big questions. But the purpose of this continuum, the Birchos Kriya Shema and Shema, and then into the Shemona Esrei, is to make that faith not just something that we believe, but that we feel, that's personal, that we love, that we're committed to. And that's what enables us then to stand in front of the Ribono Shel Olam and pray and engage in Shemona Esrei. So we're gonna pause here for this week. There's a lot of heavy material. Don't we want to jump into Shemona Esrei? Next week, we'll try to cover as much as we can from Shemona Esrei and the end of davening. So we'll pause here. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate your participation. And I'm happy to stay for a few moments for questions and observations. Thanks, everybody.